to Integrating Psychedelics. I'm your host, Jenny Wiener. I'm a ketamine-assisted psychotherapist based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I'm a general enthusiast for the role of psychedelics in our personal, collective, global healing. And I'm so excited to share this conversation with you today. In this episode, I'm speaking with Victoria Wushner all about 5-MeO-DMT. So we discussed this in the episode, but if you're newer to psychedelics, just a note that 5-MeO-DMT is very different than what is commonly called DMT, which is N,N-DMT. So we go into all the differences here, but 5-MeO-DMT is a profoundly powerful medicine and one that's been really important to me personally. And I've hesitated to talk about it yet because of that, because of how powerful it is. And I'm sort of wary of the role of influence and, people going out and maybe using medicines or things that they're not really familiar with yet or ready for. But Victoria really helps me to provide a lot of information and education here. And so I really offer it in that spirit. And I know that hearing about people's experiences and listening to podcasts and things has been a big part of my research and due diligence in figuring out what works for me, how to work with medicines safely, legally, work with ethical providers. So I hope that this conversation provides that for you. Just one note, I know in a lot of my episodes, including this one and possibly one more that I've recorded but not edited yet, that my audio is a little inconsistent, the volume in particular. I think I've been so wary of being too loud and overpowering guests that I have overcompensated and kept myself a little quieter, which feels like there's probably a metaphor in there somewhere that I need to look at. But I'm working on it. I will work on it in future episodes. I don't think it's too prohibitive. You can still hear me. You might just have to turn it up a little bit at times, but no need to leave a review about it. I got it. I'll work on it. But thank you for listening anyway. So I hope you enjoy this conversation and I'll catch you on the other side. Hi, Victoria. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here, coming in from Mexico. It's so lovely to be able to connect all around the world. I always start just by asking folks how they found their way to psychedelics.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think that we all kind of come from different paths. And, you know, for myself, I've always been super into the mystical and the spiritual realm. And, you know, I even have memories of myself when I was about like 10 years old in bookstores, sitting on the floor of New Age sections and spirituality sections, just kind of gobbling up anything I possibly could to try to understand, you know, what the big picture is. This whole mystical stuff. Who is this God everybody keeps talking about that I'm hearing about? And, you know, while I was getting little bits and pieces everywhere, it really wasn't until psychedelics where I started to get that big picture. And, you know, at that time when I was really young, like 10, you know, it was more of this want for there to be something so much bigger than myself. And it really shifted and transformed for me into a need for there to be something so much bigger than myself. And the reason it kind of transformed is, you know, as I headed into my teenage years, I needed to know that there was someone out there, something out there that loved me, that I was supported, that I was being divinely guided in some way, because I really didn't feel like I had that. I really didn't. And I think so many of us as children, you know, grow up with different situations and environments that lead us to feel that way. But, you know, I really went through a dark night of the soul, which kind of catapulted my healing and growth up to where I am now. So just to kind of preface, you know, around 13, you know, all of my environments were very toxic and they felt very unsafe and very dangerous to me. You know, my home life, my parents were both teenagers when they had me. So, you know, at that age, they were just leaving their 20s. They didn't have time to, go through their own healing experiences to deal with their own traumas. And so they were just replaying the same traumas that they experienced. And, I was getting the brunt of things. So things got really challenging at home. At school, things were extremely challenging. I was in a very extreme bullying situation, to the point where I was spending all of my lunch hours inside, all of my, recesses inside to keep myself safe. There was this group of boys who were very physically violent, and I was the kind of the pincushion, if you will, there. And so I had this home life that I felt was very toxic. I had this school life that was very toxic. And all at the same time, I had found myself one evening, I got raped by this guy who was like twice as old as me. He was like 32 or something. And it was just this kind of recipe for disaster of this dark night. And as many of us do, I found myself in this kind of toxic patterning of looking outside of myself to fill the holes. And, I think all of us kind of find our different ways of coping, whether it's through, alcohol or drugs or relationships. For me, it was through relationships. And starting very young, like I'm even fast forwarding only to 15, started, it was like I was like magnetizing these really dangerous situations into my life. At this time, I found myself, with a known pedophile, had groomed me for 3 months and was in a 2-year relationship and dealt with a lot of trauma. You can imagine what kind of stuff happened in that 2 years, for myself. And so, it just continued. It continued in my teens. I kept magnetizing these situations. More trauma was coming in. I was suppressing that trauma, and it was almost like I was a ticking time bomb. And I was very depressed. And finally, at 20, I found my first psychedelic ceremonial experience. And in my teens, I had kind of recreationally played around with different things like ecstasy and mushrooms, but nothing ceremonial. But at 20, I found myself in an ayahuasca ceremony. And that was huge. That was really big for me because that need for there to be something so much bigger than myself appeared for me. I really knew that there was that out there. And, while I wasn't revealed the total mysteries of the universe, a lot was revealed to me, and it really kind of flipped the script. I stopped finding myself in those situations of toxic relationships, and instead, all of my focus was kind of geared towards my own personal healing and understanding myself, understanding the universe. So after Aya, I started working with different medicines, learning under different teachers. Doing trainings in yoga, trainings with, my first training was with Cambo. So I started serving that for a few years. And then I found five. That was a game changer for me. I think it is for most people because, for anyone that's ever sat with five, it is so beyond the mind in every possible way. And, for somebody who was searching for love and, worthiness, getting to experience that for the first time was everything to me. And I knew I had found it. I knew that if this molecule could show me that I was love, not only was I worthy of love, but I was love. And so was everything else. I knew that I wanted to dedicate my life to the service of that medicine. And yeah, that's kind of where everything started. I did three different trainings with it, and started learning about integration and training with integration as well, so I could really, yeah, just support people with this tool and walking people back home to themselves and to loving themselves and everyone around them. And yeah, that's a little bit about how I got into psychedelics.
Yeah, thank you for that. In some ways, your story is so similar to people who've experienced trauma, and that you sort of kept seeking out experiences that recreated, right, what you were familiar with, even if they were destructive, traumatic, harmful. It's sort of not uncommon to see people do that. And like a lot of trauma survivors, you still had some part within you that was sort of oriented towards healing, that knew there was something sort of bigger and more out there for you. But it sounds like where your story diverges is finding medicines at like a relatively young age in a ceremonial way. And how that catalyzed things for you. That's amazing. I also maybe do just also want to pause and maybe we can talk about just what 5-MeO is, since a lot of people are learning about psychedelics and hearing about MDMA and psilocybin, but not as many people are familiar with 5-MeO and or know the difference between 5 and DMT, regular DMT.
I would love to share a little bit. So yeah, like you just said, 5-MeO-DMT and DMT are very different from one another. It's really important to make that distinction because a lot of people get their hands on 5-MeO-DMT and think that they can just treat it like it's DMT, and we've seen a lot of scary situations from that. So just to kind of differentiate between the two, DMT is a very visionary experience. It's almost like DMT takes you to the third eye, where you get to experience all possibilities and probabilities. You might see, gestures or the machine elves or, whatever, all these different dimensions of things, where 5-MeO-DMT is almost as if it takes you to the crown chakra, where it's so beyond the self. In the peak experience of 5-MeO-DMT, there is a full cessation of self. We enter into a state of non-duality, so we are no longer a self. We lose all of our individual identity, and we get to become that drop rejoining the infinite ocean again. And there's so much healing in that, but it is so beyond the mind. And in that space, our bodies play it out in so many different ways. You might see somebody sitting with 5-MeO and they're a Buddha sitter, so they don't really move. They might smile. You might see somebody who's very dynamic, where, maybe if you've looked online, sometimes you see what look like demonic exorcisms or something like that. And it's just kind of different away messages that our body has. And we all carry trauma in different parts of our bodies, and some of us more trauma than others. And we just need to almost have this tool to catalyze that expression of somatic release. And so, yeah, just to kind of preface, there are so many different ways that it's expressed in people. There's not really a black and white of what anyone's experience is going to be, but it is kind of that full mystical religious experience, if you will.
So chemically, it's a derivative of DMT, but yes, experientially, totally different. And then even within itself, like you said, so many different expressions.
And also, just so I can maybe answer some questions that people might
Please.
be having of where 5-MeO-DMT comes from, is, it can come from different forms. 5-MeO-DMT can be found, way back when. The first kind of use that was recorded was in different, like seeds, Varroa seeds. You can use it through Yopo, but now as it's kind of gaining popularity, it's through vaporization. And there's kind of two different ways that we can work with it, through vaporization, and one is through the Sonoran desert toad. So the Sonoran desert toad has these parietoidal glands that secrete this chemical compound. You squirt it out of the glands, it dries on a piece of glass, and then you later smoke it. It's really important to say that this is different than the other, which I'm about to explain, which is called jaguar or synthetic or pure molecule. And I want to say it's different because in the Bufo secretion, there is anywhere from 10 to 29% 5-MeO-DMT, and the rest of the material is additional tryptamines and alkaloids. So it's important to say this because you actually never really know, even if you're using a very accurate scale, how much you're giving somebody, how much 5-MeO-DMT you're giving someone as a facilitator, versus the other compound, which is pure 5-MeO-DMT, which is synthesized in a laboratory, which is actually what I use with people. And the reason being is I know exactly how much I'm giving somebody. Also, it's a lot safer. A lot of people that we work with are elderly participants, and elderly people, you never really know if they might have a underlying heart condition, and some of those additional tryptamines and alkaloids are cardiotoxic. And so you never really want to, put somebody in the line of fire that they may have a heart attack or something like that. So those are kind of the differences in what 5-MeO-DMT is.
And also my understanding is since it's becoming more popular, the Sonoran Desert Toads are facing some challenges and threats at this point, people sort of irresponsibly collecting it and
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That is, it's a huge thing. I'm sure we'll talk about this later in this segment, but Five, which is a harm reduction website that we created, has an entire page on this where it talks about all of the different threats that the toads are facing. From, for example, like when somebody is milking the toads, they might take the toads and bring them in a bin and go and milk them somewhere. And then they just let them out there at the location where they milk them. But the thing is the toads never leave, like, I think it's like 50 meters away from their home. And so if they're left 100 meters away from their home, they'll spend their entire lives trying to get back to
Gosh.
their home. And a lot of the time that means they need to cross roads where they're getting hit, or, constantly bumping into fences because they can't get through the fence. There's this fungus that we have as human beings that we've been releasing. A lot of people are going in and not milking with gloves on, which is proper practice. And so there's this chytrid fungus that's being released that's really, really harming the toads, and it's just so many more things. So if anybody wants to know more about that, I urge you to go to that page, which we'll talk about more later. And it has a best toad handling practices as well, if that's something that you're wanting to do.
Oh, great. That's great. Yeah, because it's heartbreaking. Yeah, to think about they live underground most of the year anyway for that, right? And for them to spend all that time searching for home is so sad.
Yeah, exactly.
But I am really excited to talk to you about integration. I don't talk about this a lot. I don't talk a lot about my personal experiences with psychedelics because I, especially with 5-MeO, where it's so big, and I never want to sort of encourage people to like use something that they're not really feeling called to or not ready for. But 5-MeO has by far been my biggest teacher, and I'm still deep in integration from an experience almost a year ago. And it's so, like you said, so unlike every other medicine in this respect. So, yeah, I'm really eager to hear sort of how you approach integration with this medicine.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've heard in every psychedelic circle how important integration is, and I personally don't feel like it's as important as it is with any other medicine than 5-MeO-DMT. It is such an important piece here. And, to separate, preparation and navigation and integration, it can't happen with this medicine. They are all a part of one another. And I'll kind of dive into why that is. Preparation is very key with this medicine. We've really noticed a direct correlation with people who have undergone thorough preparation and their ability to go deep into their experience without, challenge or fight or resistance. Because, if we are going into 5-MeO-DMT, which is a compound which allows us to fully lose our identity on our ego temporarily, what the ego says is happening in that experience is that it's dying. And when it thinks it's dying, it's gonna fight with everything it has, tooth and nail, to survive. And that can be extremely challenging to the point where it can even cause PTSD in people in their experiences because they did not feel like they were safe enough to completely lose control and surrender to their experience, allowing them to actually go deeper into their experience and gain more insight and understanding from it. So it really does start with preparation as a means to allow them to go deeper into that experience. As they go deeper into that experience, they're able to integrate more because they got more out of it, rather than just full challenge and fighting, And so we always start with prep. I use this really beautiful framework that I really love. I'm not sure how many people are familiar with it, probably quite a few. I use Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. And, I think it's really important for facilitators as people are coming to work with 5-MeO-DMT to have some kind of framework to help participants have a geography, to be able to have some kind of footing in an otherwise ungrounded territory, because it is impossible to get footing in 5-MeO. But there does need to be some kind of roadmap. And we can't ask people to, only be coming from, Buddhist backgrounds or yogic backgrounds, or like have an understanding of spirituality at all, because a lot of people are coming from backgrounds where You know, they've never even smoked cannabis before. And actually, we're seeing more people who've never even worked with psychedelics than anything, because psychedelics are being framed as something that can help actually heal and transform people. So it's important as people who have no spiritual background or understanding of psychedelics that they have a framework they can step into. And the hero's journey is just that. It is a transcultural roadmap of the human experience, and it really overlies with the entheogenic experience perfectly. And so that's what we use for prep, navigation, and integration, how we really prepare people as they're leaving their regular everyday lives, you know, tapping into what kind of called them to adventure, why they're coming to sit with medicine, tapping into what meeting the mentor is. You know, when we talk about meeting the mentor, it's, you know, tuning into the fact that the medicine, the 5-MeO-DMT, is just a tool for us to remember that we are the ones responsible of our own lives, that we are our mentors and our gurus and our teachers. And yeah, the medicine is just that tool to help us remember that. And then, you know, heading into that initiation, the initiation of stepping up to the plate to work with the medicine, and, you know, really leaving everything that we've ever known behind to temporarily step into a realm that is so far beyond the mind, that is truly mystical and boundless and limitless. And, you know, it's huge. And so many different things can come up when we look at, you know, we look at the hero's journey. This is where the character steps into a world where they meet allies, they meet enemies, they have to slay dragons, and they obtain this elixir that they get to bring back with them into their ordinary. And the same can happen in 5-MeO-DMT. You know, it can get extremely challenging. Our shadows can come up to meet us. And, you know, sometimes when those shadows come up to meet us, it's parts of ourselves that we've been running away from our entire lives, or maybe we've had an aversion to looking at different parts of ourselves, and you know, they're right there, and it can be extremely scary to the ego, you know, because it's wrapped itself around these different stories, you know. And really, in order to get ourselves, you know, as deep as possible into the experience, we need to be willing and able to, like I said, temporarily leave behind our individuality. And so, you know, as we're leaving those parts of ourselves behind, if every bit of us, you know, that we are, we're letting go of it, who are we really? It can be extremely challenging. And so that's kind of where the ego death comes into play. And we always like to kind of equip people for this experience. This is where Joseph Campbell talks about the ordeal, where that hero must slay the dragon to continue into the experience and, you know, really, really grasp that elixir. And in that ego death, it is that full sacrificing over of oneself to have that experience. And, you know, it can really bring up a lot in people. And we always like to kind of support people in understanding what things can come up in this. And it's kind of those stickiest things that the ego kind of clings onto for control in that moment of, you know, places where we feel guilty or ashamed, places where we feel resentment or anger. You know, the things that really tell us that we are not worthy of entering into the kingdom of God. And we have to let go of those stories in order to pass through. And, you know, sometimes we whip right through it. Sometimes we whip right through into 5-MeO. We don't have any challenges, any shadows. You know, we don't really even know if we experience an ego death, and it's just completely blissful. But we do, as part of preparation to support us in integration, we need to always explain to people that these things can happen. Because if you don't know they can happen, and they do happen, that can get really, really hairy in there. And so, you know, and also letting people know that, you know, there's healing in every part of this experience. It doesn't, you know, I think it's so easy for us as Westerners to have a goal-oriented experience of like, I'm doing 5-MeO, I'm having an ego death, and it's going to be pure love, and that's all I'm coming for, you know. And that's not always what we get. It's not always what we need. And, you know, I can say from personal experience of myself and also serving people of, you know, sometimes the biggest experiences come from the challenging experiences, and they show us, you know, what we're holding on to. They show us where we can heal and where we can grow. And so, Yeah, I think it's always important to support people and, welcoming in whatever is coming for us, whatever insights and wisdoms the medicine wants to bring us in whatever form it is. And so, yeah, that's kind of around the preparation experience. And obviously, we go into a lot more detail as the hero's journey has so many different stages, and there's so many different things can come up. But yeah, just equipping people with the right tools so as they do come up, they know how to kind of navigate it. And that kind of brings us into the integration portion of things. Integration with this medicine can be tricky. It can be super tricky. And the reason that I say that is, earlier in the podcast, we were talking about how, for example, with DMT, it is very visionary. And that's like with so many other psychedelics as well. If you're on ayahuasca or mushrooms and you're on this multi-hour visionary experience where you're having, different experiences with maybe our ancestors or interdimensional beings or past lives or whatever's coming up. And if we have that in an experience, when we get into our integration experience or period, we have a lot of content to kind of fall back onto. We have a lot of content to look to of, oh, okay, this came to me. Why did that come to me? Let me kind of dig into that and integrate that. With 5-MeO, it's not like that at all. A lot of the time we see people coming out of experience where they're like, wow, just wow, what do I do with that? And there's not a lot. It does happen sometimes, but I would say there's not much visionary experience happening. It is more of a feeling-based space. It is a knowing or a gnosis, which is an alchemical word for knowledge through experience itself. And how do we integrate a knowing if we're not being given visions or, beings aren't saying things to us, and instead it's a knowing? How do you do that? And, it's really important to say that is why integration is so important, because the gifts and the treasures after a 5-MeO DMT experience come by virtue of doing integration itself. How much energy we put in is how much we're going to get out of it. And because, it is more of a knowing rather than a content-based experience, a lot of the time people can come out of the experience and they feel like they have this perpetual glow for a few weeks, and then it kind of fades away and they're like, oh, well, now what? And that's what we call the peak experience, where if we can kind of get hooked into following these peak experiences or chasing peak experiences. We have a big 5-MeO DMT experience. It's beautiful, it's blissful, it's amazing. We get so many, big, beautiful kind of insights in that experience. But then when we come back into our everyday regular life and that kind of just dips back down, and we're back in our work lives and our relationships and everything's normal, it feels like nothing really happened. And that's because we didn't integrate the experience itself. So I always kind of like to let people know is integration is a non-negotiable with 5-MeO-DMT. If you do not prepare yourself for integration, it is so easy for us to just bypass it, to not do anything with it. And so just kind of, the first line of defense here is before even having your 5-MeO DMT experience, brace yourself for your landing. Decide how you're going to start integrating. For us, we include in people's retreats that they have to integrate, and they get assigned an integration specialist, that's, somebody that we specially picked out for that person, and 4 integration sessions are included over the course of a month. That they can, they can obviously make those integration sessions longer, for many months, but it's a non-negotiable. Rather than, maybe you have the experience, you get back into your life, and you're like, I feel great, so I don't need to do anything at all, and then it just fades away. And yeah. So that's the first step of integration there. I'm gonna take a drink of water.
I mean, you described the experience so beautifully. It's so hard to put 5-MeO into words. Like you said, there isn't that same narrative content. The best I've been able to describe it is like collapsing inward on myself and then dissolving
great.
into everything and nothing. And, you know, I think I didn't have maybe as good of a plan for long-term integration as I should have, but I found that the experience has just continued to unfold in waves for me. And I sort of couldn't avoid it. I couldn't avoid integrating because every few months I'll have some sort of seismic internal shift or something that unfolds that is so clearly sort of reverberating from that experience and, you know, decisions about my business or my life or, you know, whatever. And it's like this knowing of of truths that, you know, in a different way than I've ever had before. And so, yeah, I think being prepared for that and how it continues to unfold is so important. And the reactivations of the medicine, had I not been sort of prepped for that, you know, in the weeks following, you can sort of slip back in to the journey space. It would have been really scary, but I was prepared for it and actually really like cherished those moments and sort of was sad when they were over. So it's so special in that way.
Absolutely. Reactivations are fantastic, and I think that's also a part of preparing for the integration period as well, is like understanding what they are, you know, even though we don't actually understand what they are.
Right.
No, nobody does. It's amazing. I would love to do some kind of research on it, or you know, see others do research. But yeah, like I said, nobody really knows what they are, but they are a glimmer of the experience to a full-blown 5-MeO experience, and they can happen anywhere from regularly, anywhere from a few days to a few weeks after the experience. They generally happen between the witching hours, 2 to 4 a.m. Nobody knows why. And like I said, it can be a very small 5 experience or a full-on experience. And you know what we've been finding, it's been really cool to have a retreat center where people are, you know, staying with us for multi-day containers, where we're getting to witness a lot of reactivations in real time, and you know, seeing how other people react with them. And you know, what we're seeing, not only in ourselves, yes, we work with the medicine, but everybody else, is it seems that the reactivations are going back to the same space that the person went in the actual medicine experience. If somebody had a blissful, boundless experience, they generally have a blissful, boundless experience with the reactivation. If somebody had a very challenging experience, they generally have a challenging experience when they have a reactivation. And so it's almost like we can understand reactivations as these reverberations that continue, even though we're off of the mat with 5-MeO, that God frequency is still ringing through us, even though we are that God frequency, you know. It's still ringing through us, and it's like there's still more insights and knowledge that medicine wants to impart on us. And yeah, I recently had a brother talking to me about reactivations, and I really loved the way that he talked about them. I hadn't heard about it described this way, where, you know, we are the experience of 5. If we take away all of our stories and our ego, individual identity, and we go back to what we really are at baseline, we are that experience. We are it. And so in a reactivation, we're just experiencing more aspects of ourself as that it, and opening ourselves to different layers of unlocking deeper layers of our consciousness, and just kind of inviting that it energy, if you will, that consciousness into us in a bigger way, so that as we kind of traverse into our everyday regular lives afterwards, we're shifted at a DNA level, if you will, allowing different shifts to happen within our lives. And so I always just, yeah, I like to just listen to everybody's kind of thesis on what reactivations are, and I'm really curious to see what kind of research comes out, and I'm sure it will.
I love that you use the word frequency because it does feel like five feels like getting tuned to the right frequency or to this like special vibrational frequency that you didn't know was there and that was you all along. And actually,
tapping into that vibration, I'm curious if this is common, after sort of my last, we did sort of several of these, because five are very short sessions. You can probably speak to it better than me exactly how long, but so you do sort of sometimes a series in within one, sort of couple hours. But after my sort of final session, I had been really still for all of them, and then the last one, like something sort of cracked, and I tapped into this like deep vibrational force. And in the weeks following, found that singing and humming and vocal toning became super important to continue like extracting things sort of within me. So yeah, I'd love to talk about this frequency aspect.
Yeah, I mean, what you were just talking about of that wanting to sing and let that energy out. That's kind of one of the ways that we let people know that, they could be primal screamers, and it doesn't just mean screaming of like, screaming in the medicine, like, ah, it could be, singing and vocal toning. And, they say in the beginning there was the word, right? And if the word is sound frequency, then why wouldn't it come out in that way? Why wouldn't it be sound? And yeah, we get to see a lot of people going into that in medicine. It's really neat. Yeah, something that I kind of want to speak to is, and it's one of the things that I bring up in integration. There's kind of three different things, and one is self-inquiry is one of the biggest things in integration to always do, is to, find out what's coming up, what is coming up to be looked at. Because, in a 5-MeO experience, we kind of always liken it to throwing a grenade into the subconscious lake of your mind. And after the experience of five, because, that grenade went off, all of the stuff that's been pushed down and suppressed for so long is starting to bubble up. And as it's bubbling up, it's really interesting, because normally, when we have so much stuff going on outside of ourselves, and our senses are really being pulled in so many different directions, and our mind is the monkey mind, it can be so hard to see what's coming up in ourselves and really easy to bypass. But after 5-MeO, there's this like heightened observer awareness that happens. And it's really hard to explain if someone hasn't had a 5 experience, but everything kind of quiets down, and we're able to observe our thoughts more. We're able to observe different patternings and triggers, and understand, what's coming up to be looked at. And so that's kind of one of the kind of pillars that I like to always talk to first, is how are we going to engage in self-inquiry within ourselves? What feels best? And everybody, it's going to be different. Some people, are going to be journalers. Some people are going to be, I don't have time to journal, so I'll do voice notes. One of the things that I really love, and a teacher of mine kind of put me onto this, was carrying a tiny little notepad in your pocket with you and a little pencil. And anytime anything kind of comes up through the day that causes your body somatically to, get triggered, or you feel something coming up and your heart starts to flutter, like anything, somebody cuts you off and you get mad, just kind of like writing like a little bullet point note of what's been going on. And you'll be able to look through your week and see, for example, if you have a propensity towards rage, or if maybe your go-to, for example, after doing this, I realized that my go-to was kind of putting up this wall. Like, I'd get triggered and I put up this wall and I'd get really quiet. And I didn't notice that I would do that until I started to like really chart, through self-inquiry, chart what was going on with me, how I was reacting to different situations. And so, I think starting with a point of self-inquiry is really important here, especially as we're in a state of heightened awareness. And then kind of the second thing is, as we have this self-inquiry that's coming up within ourselves, we're going to be able to see where the toxic patterning is. We're going to be able to see what kind of stuff that we gathered as children that aren't serving us anymore and are actually causing us suffering in our lives. And we get to reprogram ourselves. So the second kind of thing that I always like to share with people is stepping into self-directed neuroplasticity. Through your self-inquiry, decide and figure out what programs are running within yourselves that you like and which ones you don't like. When you find the ones that you don't like, we're going to start working with self-directed neuroplasticity. And, you know, lots of people have different ways of working with this. The way that works best for me and I've had really good success with is using opposite action. For example, and this is a vulnerable share here. The first thing that I ever did when it came to opposite action was, you know, as a child, I realized that I had some pretty serious body dysmorphia issues. And it wasn't until my, you know, in my healing path that these actually came up that I realized, like, wow, I'm hating myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I would go into a bathroom. I'd go into the bathroom to, like, brush my teeth or, you know, use the washroom, you know, only needing to be in there for 2 minutes. And then suddenly you're in the bathroom for 15 minutes, picking yourself apart in the mirror. And, you know, that is building programs of self-hatred. And, you know, I had to undo those. So my opposite action was the exact opposite. I would spend time in front of the mirror every day, even when it felt like I didn't want to or felt disingenuous. I would spend time in front of the mirror every single day and I would tell myself that I loved myself, and I would make sure that I'd pick out at least two things that I loved about myself. And, you know, at first it was like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. This feels so uncomfortable to me. But after doing that day after day after day after day, I was starting to plant new seeds in myself, new programs that were starting to sprout because I was watering them and building a new character. A character that loved herself. So yeah, the first thing is that self-inquiry, figure out what programs are not working, self-directed neuroplasticity, put in the programs that are working, somewhere like figuring out what path you want to lie for yourself and how you want to walk it. And then, you know, the third thing is the thing that I'm most excited about, which is self-initiated relationship. And even when you come to 5-MeO, there's a lot of people that, you know, hear that it's good for healing and they have an aversion to spirituality. We see quite a few people that have an aversion to it. And this is undoubtedly a spiritual, mystical experience. And you might not feel like it before it, but afterwards, you can't doubt it. And, you know, I truly feel that, you know, the thing that we're all kind of suffering from is this loss of remembering who we are, that we feel disconnected from our truth, that we feel disconnected from our home, which is that infinite being, which is ourself. And we are divine by nature. And this experience with 5-MeO-DMT allows us to remember our divine nature again. And so, you know, there's a very special relationship that we have the ability to cultivate there. And it's up to each and every one of us to do that. And it's going to be completely unique for all of us and how that goes. But, you know, finding different types of practices that allow us to get out of our everyday regular kind of space into a sacred space. And that can be, you know, meditation or breath work. For me, my favorite thing is prayer or altar work, where, you know, I feel like I'm physically stepping out of the everyday life into this very sacred portal and building a relationship with that divine being that we are. And the more energy that we really put into that divine relationship, it's going to echo out into our everyday regular life. And, you know, suddenly there's so many stories. I have some crazy stories myself of, you know, people putting in the time and energy to building this divine connection. And suddenly their outer life is reflecting back crazy synchronicities and signs and symbols. And it's almost like there's this divine hand or guidance that's really just flowing us towards these different paths and directions. And we really feel supported. And so, yeah, that's my favorite thing to talk about ever.
Yeah, no, it's so helpful to have a framework like that, especially for a medicine that's so in some ways amorphous and just hard to sort of put into words and formulate. I think that's really grounding and really, really can help orient people with, like, mm-hmm. what to do with that. And you mentioned the retreat center. Tell me about that and how, yeah, like, what lends itself well, like how 5-MeO lends itself well to the retreat format.
Yeah, so I'll kind of share about kind of everything we have going on, and then people can kind of understand the big picture of things.
Great.
So we have a umbrella kind of company that's called Cavalia Collective, and it's a psychedelic wellness company, if you will. And under it, there's different kind of subsidiaries, and one of them is called Tandava Retreats, and this is specifically for 5-MeO-DMT. We focus on retreats, and we have a center in Mexico. And, while our focus is individual private hybrids, we also do special retreats. And so I'll kind of talk about both of them. And our individual private hybrids, the reason we call it that is we have multi-day containers. So right now we're offering 5-day containers with people that includes preparations. There's 2 to 3 weeks of preparation beforehand. There's a medical and psychological screening form. We have a discovery call to really just tune in and feel into if this is the right medicine for this person and, why they're feeling called to it. We work with salival swabs. So we're partnered with Halogen. And, this swab gets mailed to the participant's house. They swab their mouth, they send it back to a lab, and then the lab sends them the results, which they share with us. And these results let us know if the participant is close to a psychotic break, which is very helpful. And also lets us know if the person is, if they have a propensity towards serotonin syndrome, which really gives us an understanding of dosage for people, because some people need to be dosed lower, and some higher. And we really don't want to give serotonin syndrome to people. And then after that, they get to two preparation calls as well, is really dialing into why they're coming, dialing into their fears, addressing their fears, figuring out, where they'd like to go in their journeys. And then there's the 5 days. And during those days, people get two individual 5-MeO-DMT sessions. So it's just myself, my partner, and the participant coming to sit with the medicine. And we work with the medicine in different ways. So our first session with people is kind of the big bang, where they go in for the full dose. And the reason being, people always ask us, like, why do you do it in this order? Why don't you start with small doses first and then go with big dose after? We always start with a large dose because, as I explained, is in the peak experience of this medicine, we have that full shutdown of the self. So if we start with a lower dose with somebody, it can actually be pretty tricky and challenging because the mind is still present. And if it's never had this experience before, and it's, halfway in this mystical kind of state and halfway in the body, it's going to be doing everything it can to try and figure out the experience, which it can't figure out. So it can be really disorienting to people. And so we always start with kind of that big bang, that throwing that grenade into the subconscious of the mind. And then our second ceremony with people is low to medium doses. And once they've had that big kind of session and everything's kind of coming up, we can get really surgical with it and tune into the different areas where they'd like to kind of laser focus into healing. And it's been extremely successful. We also do integration sessions privately, and we also do neurofeedback sessions privately. But it's also a hybrid in the container because people are getting group yoga sessions, breath work, meditation. There are group integration sessions, hikes up into the mountain, town excursions, and things like that. And then after the experience itself, there's, like I was saying earlier, there's four integration sessions included. And we have a large database of integration specialists that we work with. They're all familiar with 5. It's a prerequisite that they understand 5-MeO-DMT, because you cannot help somebody integrate 5-MeO-DMT if you don't understand it yourself. And it's really a variety of different integration specialists, different ages, different sexes, different kind of specialties. And yeah, so that's our one kind of offering with Tandava. The other kind of offering we have with Tandava are special retreats. I just held a women's retreat myself. I loved it. It was my
I was
first woman's.
so bummed to not be
Yeah.
able to come, but next time.
Next time. Yeah, I think we're going to be doing an annual thing. And yeah, we have special retreats popping up all the time. So we'll be having women's retreats, men's retreats. I know that we're in the works of talking about doing a tantric women's retreat, a couples tantric retreat. Yeah, it's going to be beautiful, and I can't wait to see, all the different teachers and facilitators that we bring in to work with as well. So yeah, that's one of the subsidiaries. And then on the other side of things, we have Five, which I talked about earlier. And you know, I love to share about Five so
Yeah.
much because I feel like it's such a important thing right now with this medicine. You know, so Five stands for 5-MeO-DMT Information and Vital Education. And it's a centralized resource hub for 5-MeO-DMT. And you know, it's a very thorough resource bank. There's 30 pages on everything from, you know, 5-MeO-DMT podcasts, lectures, documentaries. There's an information page, an FAQ page. We've got a page that are all our integration specialists. So if somebody, you know, sat with another facilitator and they're needing support, they can go to that page. We've got trainings for people who are already serving this medicine but would like to expand their tool sets and their knowledge base. People who are ready to start serving, who have a really deep understanding and relationship with this medicine, and just, you know, so much more. Scholarship programs, if you know, somebody wants to work with this medicine, but you know, maybe finances are something that's kind of standing in the way. That's not something that should stand in the way of someone having this experience. So, you know, we've teamed up with different facilitators and retreat centers to kind of put that offering out to people. And yeah, you know, the whole idea behind Five was harm reduction. And for so many people listening who may understand or know about 5-MeO, there's a lot of crazy stuff happening in the space, and there has been for quite a few years, from, you know, sexual abuse to abuse in power, you know, people getting out of the experiences being completely cracked open, having PTSD, you know, people committing suicide. And it's just crazy. It's just crazy and so unneeded because this medicine can, you know, I believe this medicine can really change the world. And the only thing that's standing in the way from this medicine truly changing the world is our perception of it. And that perception is really kind of being skewed towards it being a dangerous medicine because the safety standards, you know, and then the trainings that are out there. And I can speak for myself, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, we created this was because for my own path through 5-MeO, seeing the crazy circus from day one, you know, I did my first training. My first training was 6 days. I didn't learn preparation. I didn't learn
Oh
integration. I
my
didn't learn
gosh.
anything about first aid. You know, I didn't learn anything about contraindications. If I would have went out and served after my first training, I probably would have killed people.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm happy that I had the understanding to, you know,
Yeah.
reach out to people, other teachers and mentors to continue my training. But I don't think that that's the case for everyone. And, you know, there can be this tendency for the ego to have this experience and say, wow, that was it. That was everything. I'm going to serve this medicine. And they go do a short training and they're like, I have everything I need. I'm just going to go serve the world's most powerful medicine to people. And that's that. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with feeling a desire towards working with the medicine, but there's a very big responsibility that comes with working with this medicine. And it's literally an ongoing responsibility. Like, no matter how much you learn, there's always more to learn, whether it's through the lens of understanding 5-MeO more, integration more, you know, getting different modalities such as internal family systems under your belt, authentic relating. Like, there's literally endless resources out there to support people in being the best facilitator possible. Because, you know, this medicine is big work, and people are oftentimes coming to this medicine with a lot of fear. I know I did. Like, it's literally like bungee jumping out of an airplane, or sorry, skydiving out of an airplane, or bungee jumping. And we need to meet people with how much energy that they're putting in. Like, we need to get as much training as possible. And yeah, Five was really just this beautiful little creation that was birthed by community for community to really support the birthing of this beautiful medicine.
Thank you so much for that resource, for creating it, for sharing it. It's, I think, going to be so instrumental in, yeah, like you said, keeping this medicine sort of sacred and respected and leveraging it for all the good that it really can bring. It's amazing. Thank you. And I'll share links to all of that. Make sure folks can get directed there.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Of course, thank you. Is there anything else that you're feeling called to share? It's okay if not.
I think the only other thing that I'd like to just kind of to say about five is that, this is kind of putting this out there for anybody who is in the five space, who has any knowledge that they want to add to the five platform. We have an open door policy. We're always onboarding new podcasts, we're onboarding new documentaries, lectures, scientific research, essays that people write. And we really want it to be a database that, like I said, is created by community. So if there's anybody who's listening who has something that they want to contribute in any way, we would love to hear from you.
Amazing. Yeah. And is the best way for folks to get in touch through the website? Okay.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Great.
Thank you
Oh.
so much. This is such a gift. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was so great to be here and to talk about my favorite things in the world with you.
So that's the show. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to head to the show notes for all of the places that you can find Victoria and all of the amazing work she's doing. Her retreats and the educational platform Five is such a great resource to learn more about this medicine. And again, just really encouraging you, as always, but especially with 5-MeO, to do your research, to really understand what you're getting yourself into, and make sure that you're working with super skilled providers if you're going to explore this. If you are liking the podcast, as always, I would really appreciate a positive review or rating. If you can hit the subscribe button, that's great too. And if you don't like it, you have a choice about what kind of energy you want to put out in the world. And I appreciate it either way. And I appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Let me know if there's anyone you want to hear on the podcast or if you should be on the podcast. And I'll look forward to talking to you soon.